Welcome to the Why Isn't It Working? Business and Tech Podcast, talking all things business and tech in the emerging and enterprise space. Here are your hosts, Carl Wood and Michael Hamilton.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast. Today we have Daniel Bowers and Barry Smith from Opus Recruitment talking all things DevOps and IT in the Australian space. How are you going today, guys?
Very good. Thank you for having us.
Pleasure. Yeah, very well, gents. Very well.
Oh, awesome. And Carl, my partner in crime, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you, Michael, and thank you very much for asking.
Oh, awesome. Well, Carl, kick off the first question, mate.
Absolutely. So, gentlemen, besides sporting a lovely pair of beards, I feel kind of, you know, inadequate for today. obviously, you know, direct imports. So, let's start with you, Barry, and then we'll move to Daniel. So, what brought you to Australia?
I actually started off... initially, back in the day, I actually tried to be a pro golfer and failed. And kind of didn't know what I really wanted to do. So I came traveling. I ended up in Brisbane with some family friends. Then came down south to Sydney. And I thought I'd be here for a year or two. And I've never left. It's 6 years later now. And on my way to citizenship. So, that's kind of a short version of the story.
Very cool. I think we'll have to get you out in the course soon, and we're a bit more hacky. But and so, Daniel, what about yourself? What brings you here?
Yeah. So we, myself and my partner, we came over similar time to Barry. Came over like 6 years ago, nearly to the day now. Just came over as backpackers, and then we're like, how do we stay in Australia? It was because it's just so much fun. So yeah, we've seen a lot of Australia twice. We did all of WA and then all of like East Coast twice. So yeah, it's been pretty cool. And then we kind of fell into the recruitment world.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much, guys, for attending today. It's a pleasure. Now, you guys obviously both work for Opus, which has a very, very good reputation for finding, you know, very technical people in regards to, you know, DevOps developers, SecOps as well. So Barry, let's start with you. You obviously look at the permanent employee basis from DevOps. One of the big things that comes up a lot is around the skill shortage in the Australian IT industry. So is that something that you find is difficult to find people who want to take a full-time role in the DevOps space and have all the requisite, you know, requirements that a client's after?
So it's kind of actually like a running joke really with me and Dan, because he does the contract space. And when I first started doing DevOps, it was probably about 70-80% were contractors. And I had to basically dig and, you know, find the permies. We're kind of seeing a bit more of a trend now where it's actually kind of flipping back, especially since COVID. It's flipping back towards more of there's more of definitely clients are looking for more permies, I would say. I don't know what Dan thinks. We actually haven't spoke about that in the last while, but we're definitely seeing that trend. It definitely was a very contracts heavy market, 100%.
Yeah, so Daniel, just expanding on that, have you seen a bit of a shift now with people because of things like COVID, like wanting to take less of a risk in regards to a contract or move into the permanent space? I know a lot of companies at the moment also are starting to sort of turn off projects they're considering non-essential, and a lot of, you know, DevOps initiatives have been sort of wound up into that as well from an infrastructure and development side. So have you seen a bit of a shift more towards people looking for permanent work now, Daniel?
So you can answer that in a few different ways, right? So for me, I'm targeting projects. I'm not looking potentially at product businesses, because they will tend to lean towards more permanent. The other pieces that I've focused on is looking for stuff that's compliance and governance related. The things like open banking, like med tech, all the stuff that's going to be in extreme demand at the moment, telcos, ISPs, and so on. The stuff that I have seen, which is real difficult, is that there are contract work. There is contract work, and there's a lot of contract work, but clients are, I don't know if it's penny pinching, but they're definitely more having to look, do we really need these people at this point? Like, what real business value can they bring? So they're adding an extra stage into the interview process, or in some cases, two or three, which normally contracts is one or two stages. Now they're having a lot of times they're having to do tech challenges and then having to meet talent acquisition of the business, et cetera, et cetera. And also some of the rates have taken a pretty big hit, right, from what I'm able to offer candidates at the moment. So they're the two or three main points that I've found.
So that's an interesting point, I guess, you know, before, like, you guys could give us a bit of a gift of the gab and say, hey, look, I've got this hot guy sitting on the bench, you know, you really want to snap him up before someone else does. Has the power dynamic now shifted, obviously, back, like you said, Dan, to the business where they are taking their time a bit more, they're being a bit more sort of cautious in regards to who they're hiring, and they know that they've basically sort of got a bit more of a power stage based on the fact that there are so many people now on the market due to this situation we're in?
So, again, it goes back to the point I made earlier, but around the kind of the governance pieces as well. So if someone leaves, they have to fill that quickly. Otherwise, an entire project doesn't move forward. And also, we are in, if you're looking at the straight kind of bog standard DevOps automation, cloud infrastructure within AWS, you are right. There was a lot of very good people and now immediately available. But the people with the kind of the specialism, like the DevSecOps pieces, or they've built out Kubernetes clusters in enterprise, for example, businesses aren't letting those people go. They're actually giving them more work to do that. So finding specialist people is always very, very difficult. But it's also more difficult at the moment to get these people to want to move. So if they're already in a long-term contract and they've just been extended, even if we're offering 50% a day pay rises, which we can't do anyway, people are just reluctant to leave. I think that's been the challenge for Barry as well. So all the good people are just really, really difficult to try and headhunt out of positions.
Yeah.
Interesting. And with that in mind, what is the actual skill set? So I know over the years, we had originally on Stephen Wallace on a couple of weeks ago, and obviously he loves his DevOps and Meetup Madness. Now, what we're finding is the skill sets and the requirements of the clients are very different, but where are you finding the highest demand is? Is it in security? Is it in building containers? Is it in automating testing components within DevOps or deployments? Where do you find the high demand of skill sets are required in? Probably start with you, Daniel, from a contract point of view.
Yeah, okay. So it's more where the projects are. So, and where I can still add value. So most of the stuff that I have been doing since kind of COVID really took a crux on Australia is that DevSecOps piece. Well, they're really, really, really difficult people to find, but it's an extreme demand. Like having exec level people saying, now, how the hell are we going to get 100% of the workforce working from home? And how are we going to secure our infrastructure? How are we going to secure this? So that's where the demand came for me. Cloud security, three phase approach to CI/CD, container security, and so on. That's easily the highest demand with a skill shortage. That's where you can find value from using someone like me.
Okay, and that was really COVID driven. So you found a real shift in the last.
Definitely, yeah. And I had worked in that space, but it certainly hadn't been somewhere that I had concentrated on. It's a whole different ball game to the usual like DevOps piece, but I learned pretty quickly, spoke to some like really high level, like high caliber candidates, and kind of learned that market over the space of, well, it's like 8 months now.
Fantastic. What about yourself, Barry? What, you're seeing the same thing or something different?
Yeah, COVID straight away. I reckon I got busier when COVID actually happened in March or April. My business actually went through the roof. It was nonstop for me. And it was specifically DevSecOps and SRE right then and there. And it was funny because two, three months beforehand, you're kind of your standard like DevOps consultant that was so hard to find in some of these major consultancies that we all know of around, I just focus on Sydney. So around Sydney, they were impossible to find. They're impossible to get out of where they were, especially in the perm side of things. They actually, a lot of those people became available and nobody really wanted them. And DevSecOps SRE just boomed straight away. It was interesting because I'd never actually really focused in on the DevSecOps space. Straight away it was like I had to learn quick, like very quickly. It was interesting. But we ended up building out that market. Like when we start working something, we build out the market. So we kind of target different companies, target different managers, find out where the projects are, et cetera, et cetera. We built it out pretty much within a month, I'd say. It's still quite a small space, I think. Really just went through the roof.
Yeah, mentioning that actually, obviously we're in a much smaller market globally. So we're like, you know, when you do have, say, the top 1% of people who work in this area, it's a very small sort of pool to pick from. You see some familiar faces a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Are you guys doing anything in regards to, you know, with younger candidates? Are you dealing primarily with senior roles? Is there any sort of opportunities coming through at the junior level? Or do you find clients now want that seniority through this period of time and they want, you know, it's kind of like a steady hand on the ship?
There is one client that comes out straight away. I don't know if I can say them, but they're a global consultancy, and they have they basically have a program called the Bright Young Things program, where I think that focuses across contract and perm, and they're basically looking for young talent to get them up to speed in the DevOps space. Also, I mean, some of my clients are looking more and more for like the junior level hybrid client or hybrid candidate. So dev background that wants to work more in CI/CD. And they're quite tough to find because a dev typically wants to just, you know, be a dev and doesn't have much interest in that infrastructure space. There's bits and pieces out there, definitely.
Cool. Dan, from your side, one of the big areas, I guess, is at the moment we're seeing kind of a shift from pure DevOps to that DevSecOps as well. Does that make it harder for you to find that additional component, like people who have that security background as well as things like containerization and development skills? I mean, for me, it sort of seems like a lot of the time people kind of want an all-in-one resource, which is incredibly difficult to find, you know, without some sort of compromise. So how do you sort of, you know, you were talking about headhunting before, but how do you go and try and seek these people out?
So you're right. So a lot of clients want everything. They want a Ferrari and they've only got budget for a Volvo, right? It's a standard thing. But so the way I've tried to combat this side of things is knowing a lot of like very high caliber people. So if they are missing a skill set or they're missing a domain within DevOps, if they are going towards like a DevSecOps role, it's getting them to actually upload like mini GitHub repos on securing a CI/CD pipeline or show some cloud security or show a compliance piece. So actually proving like capability before an interview or even during, because if there's skill gaps within, or if they haven't interviewed too well, or there's a bit they've stumbled on, they've got an actual demonstration of their work during the interview or after, they can share it as well. That's how I've combated it.
Is the CV dead? I mean, in this space, is there any point really having one? Is it better sort of having like a personal site with a repository? Does that speak more to, you know, your end clients? And is a CV just like a little bit of a check on your work history, but the real stuff they want to see is your technical capability?
Definitely not. Like for us, the biggest sell for us is the CV. Gone are the days of having like a 10-page CV with every detail on it. Like some of the best CVs I've got are probably the most gifted people. They've got one or two page with just the technologies they've used, how long they've been there, a couple of references at the bottom if they want to put it on there. But then having an up-to-date LinkedIn page, having, like you say, their website up-to-date, having that additional stuff is crucial, in my opinion. It gives you that extra 1% on other candidates that aren't doing it. But if you're going to put your GitHub accounts on there, make sure it's up to date and make sure it's work that you're actually proud of. Like some people leave it on there. I've asked some other like tech people and they're like, they haven't touched this for 3 years. Like what's the point?
Yeah, no, very good. Good thing. I think, like Michael was saying, we spoke to Robin, who said the people who really stand out are the ones that kind of constantly evolve their CV and their personal projects to always be up to date. So that, you know, even if they're not looking, you know, you get gentlemen like yourselves might come and give them a tap on the shoulder and go, "Hey, do you want to have a look at this?" They're already ready to go, right? They don't need to spend an extra week kind of getting everything up to speed as well. So
definitely,
yeah,
100%. I think the other really important stuff is getting people building their own personal brands. So, like, go attend meetups, 10 webinars, then have some questions to ask people as well. And then naturally work seems to find you. So you don't actually have to interview for many places. That's the common theme I've been finding as well.
So who's the meetup king between yourself and Barry? Like, who likes to attend? You know, we spoke to Steve Wallace, obviously, before, runs Meetup Madness, Beer Ops, all those sort of things. So you guys are obviously active members in that community as well. Is that where, you know, it's a good place to, not, I guess, not if you're only looking out for talent, but is it also a good place just to network and sort of, you know, get your name out there too?
Buzz?
Yeah, I think we've mixed and matched really over the years, haven't we? I mean, I myself have done CV workshops in the office here. I've done interview technique workshops, and then I've also gone to tons of meetups as well. I think lately, I'll actually hold my hands up and say, in the last, say, 6 months or a year, I've probably taken a tiny bit more of a backseat. And Dan has done the DevSecOps. He did the DevSecOps podcast or meetup a little while ago. But I think we mix and match it. Yeah, we're always thereabouts. I think a big thing that we do, we try and stay very active on LinkedIn. We're constantly like updating, constantly looking out. Like, a lot of our work now just comes from referrals through either meetups or you know, just people we know in general through the space. But a lot of our stuff comes from LinkedIn, doesn't it, Dan?
Yes, huge. To your question as well. So yeah, the meetup stuff, it's been primarily like on the DevSecOps and container stuff. Just try and attend as many as I can. But again, go back to like Barry's point, like, we're probably more active on LinkedIn, sharing articles of what's like the latest technologies, or trying to get people to come and chat to us on our posts, like asking about new technologies that we've noticed a trend in, or what clients are doing and so on. You've probably seen that. So
I do rate your engagement on social media. It's fantastic, both of you guys, actually, with that. But obviously, we've got the Australian sector, obviously IT sector. Do you guys find that we have to bring in people from overseas to fill in jobs over the last couple of years? Or do you find that the university is producing the type of people that you can place into jobs, juniors and semi-seniors, into jobs? Or what do you think we should be doing in Australia to improve the DevOps skill sets? You want to start that one, Barry? Get your thoughts on that one.
It's an interesting one, because as a business, we've got a side business called Knowledgy, which you know very well, which is tackling something similar and developing talent internally. I think the immediate way I would answer the question, from my perspective, is that when we're hired by companies, we're not hired to bring in people from externally. We're not hired to bring in juniors typically, unless it's a junior role. Like, 90% of my stuff is senior mid-level, and they're looking for the startup persona. You know, the person that's engaged constantly, the person that's doing extra training courses, attending meetups, etc. So we're in a way, like, this is the thing about recruitment. We are paid to find exactly what they're looking for typically, rather than to create something, which is, but the difference what we're trying to do now is with the new brand of Knowledgy, which we are trying to create that new pool of talent, because everybody hires recruiters to pull the same talent from their competitors, and it's not working anymore, you know. I spoke to one of our major clients, is a major media organization here, and they're fed up of paying the same money every year to a UTS or University of Sydney to basically try and hire the top 1% and compete with Canva, whoever it may be, you know. So I think there's a lot of work to be done, but I think there's enough I think that hopefully we're doing enough in the next year or two that we can make some sort of a dent. Yeah.
What about yourself, Daniel? What's your opinion on the skills shortage from your side? I know contract's different. Yeah.
So I have flown in people. Like it's not a large proportion. It's probably, I don't know, 2-3% of kind of placements I've done. Like I've flown English guy in for a motor company. And I've flown in a guy from Scotland for a bank. I've flown someone in, Aussie citizen from Germany into a bank. So it's more around knowing where people are. And because Opus have got offices in Europe, heavily in the UK and in America, they're constantly chatting to people and they're like, hey, this guy's Australian, they can come back, or and vice versa. So that we have been able to lean on those on our other offices for referrals. It doesn't always work out. I can have an absolute superstar, but then the clients aren't hiring. But going back to the kind of junior questions, that's definitely more of a permanent side of the business. Mm. Like with contracts, it's normally a gun for hire, like disaster recovery, or hey, we need all the architectural cloud set up. And then they kind of hand over to a permanent team that are there to maintain, add features, and so on. So that's for me. I probably had a handful of junior roles since being at Opus, but most of my stuff is that senior and above.
So let's say Michael gets sick of running podcasts tomorrow. He wants a career change. He wants to move into the DevSecOps space. From your experience, guys, what are the areas that he should focus on? Like, if he's going to have a crack, should he look at things, around the container sector? What should he go into? Where do you see the demand from a technology perspective, right? Ignoring the soft skills, which we'll touch on in a minute. But from the tech part, what should he focus on?
Definitely look at the containers and orchestration piece without a doubt. That's from speaking to people, clients and candidates, that's essentially the future at this point. We can always change. DevOps is always changing. That's kind of why I love this space. Also getting yourself, if you're from a non-technical background, is going out and getting some basic certifications. Start from the bottom and then work your way through. It goes a long way, even in the contracting space. It's probably a whole other subject we can talk about, is certs and stuff as well. But I'm a firm believer, if you're passionate enough to want to go into this sector, going off and spending your own time and potentially money investing in yourself is a huge, huge opportunity. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I think so. Barry, do you agree with that? Is there anything else you think Mike should be looking into?
I think a big one is the engineering side of things, like being able to at least read some code a bit more than a lot of the stuff I do is, there's a clients that will want people that are your typical scripters, like, PowerShell, Bash, whatever it may be. But some of the object-oriented languages, programming languages, and the functional programming stuff, if you can read and write something in that area and are willing to even keep adapting your skill set as you go on top of the CI/CD orchestration piece and container piece, that would be definitely an area, because they kind of know, those guys kind of know why they're building it,
That's another area I guess I wanted to touch on during this conversation as well. One of the things that popped up, I think it's popped up through every conversation we've had with everyone on this show, has been around the soft skills, around having a general understanding of business and then being able to communicate from tech back to someone who's non-technical about why they're doing something. So have you guys seen that? And Barry, I guess I'll start with you. Have you seen candidates who are technically brilliant but kind of fall short in the interview process because they can't articulate their ideas very well?
Definitely, yeah, definitely. Especially people that haven't been, people that haven't been interviewing for 2 or 3 years if they go in. Because typically, everybody thinks of a developer, an engineer, is their introverts, right? So, the articulating it back to especially like a lot of my businesses are startups and SMEs that are looking for that kind of spark and connection almost straight away when somebody walks in a room, and then the technology piece comes on top of that. And yeah, if they're not quite articulate enough, or don't quite have that spark straight away, they struggle to go back to talk to the business and the business and the managers. But I mean, does that answer your question? I kind of tailed off a tiny bit there.
Yeah, it does. But I mean, is that another thing? Like, you know, can these guys kind of, you know, hide more in an enterprise where they're there just to do a job? And maybe that's more a question for Dan because you're project focused. Can someone who is technically brilliant but kind of, you know, a bit, I guess, antisocial is probably the best way to put it without me starting to use words and get us in trouble, but because they're on a bigger project working as part of a team, can that be hidden more than opposed to you, Barry, where if they're working for a startup, they absolutely have to be able to communicate with everyone as well?
I think from like a contracts perspective and the stuff that I've focused on, like I said before, it's that kind of senior engineer upwards to like lead architect. If you haven't got that business sense about you, you're just they're not going to hire you. It's a matter of fact, because they can't justify spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on a disaster recovery project or greenfield project where essentially you might lead the technologies or they're leaning on you for ideas. You're just going to get chewed up by other people within that business. I think with like Barry's perspective, I think that the softer skills are probably more important than the technologies themselves, because if you've demonstrated you can learn technologies, you can't teach like the culture and the softer skills, in my opinion anyway.
But I've actually got a good example of that from yesterday, and it's a guy that just took a job with a financial institution that's going through an Azure transformation, and it was him against another guy in the second, the penultimate stage. Both of them look really strong. And then the first guy just couldn't articulate to three or four of the stakeholders why they needed to do X and Y in such a way. He just couldn't get there. And the other guy came in and basically told him what they needed to do, when they needed to do it, and how they needed to do it. And he told him that they didn't need this, this, and this. And it was actually less of a, they thought it was initially a DevSecOps role, and he said it's actually more of a lead SRE role, and he got the job. You know, he kind of created the job description himself. And that's kind of the difference, I think. Yeah, that's a good recent example.
That's excellent. On the business side of it now, you just mentioned the business outcomes before there, Daniel. What do you find with DevOps, or both of you and Barry also, what do you find with DevOps for the outcomes? Is it more technology driven from the IT department, or is the business demanding it? Kind of thing, or is it basically just focusing on efficiencies, cost reductions, or speed? What's the requirement for you guys when you're finding these resources for the outcome? Do you want to start, Barry? You want to, or Daniel?
I mean, the requirement for me, I think it's this is yin and yang for me and Dan. Like, the requirement for me is we need somebody, we've got a 10-man team, we need somebody that can come in. Probably work across a couple of different areas. Again, going back to somebody that can maybe, to get a bit technical about it, like read and write a bit of code, don't throw things back over to the developers, you know, work things out themselves, be able to have a coffee with the CEO and, you know, a coffee with the tester. You know, it doesn't matter, but I think the requirements from my side of things are completely different. And you're kind of looking for people, I find that, I'm always looking for people that I can engage with really easily, and that, you know, don't have their headphones in all day long, because that's not what that's really what it comes down to. After that, then, like, once I have that, the technologies will fall into place eventually. But that is, it's actually quite hard to find. It's quite hard to find that, believe it or not. In my space, that's where I would go. And Dan is going to completely go a different way here, I know.
Totally. Are you finding it's I know, because some clients we've talked to over the years and people I've worked with, and Carl also, it's about cost reduction, right? It's about speed. Are you finding it's efficiency and speed in DevOps for you, both you guys?
It's a It's very, very dependent on the kind of the client requirement. Like, two points I wanted to discuss. Like, you're saying the business or IT driven. I find business, you know, this is not, I'm not tarnishing the whole industry, but I find that there's a massive disconnect from the business and IT in a lot of cases, because business wants the cost reduced, whereas IT wants to improve efficiency, right? That's what I've found. It's not always the case. I can say it again, but that it is a lot of the time that does come up. And I think it's down, answering your question, what happens more often is it's really down to what the client wants. Like, we can get sent a job description and then they'll never find me people and they won't answer the phone. It's like, we're never going to place this. So we'll list every DevOps tool there is under the sun, and we don't know what they're actually looking for. But if we're spending time with clients and actually asking, like, is it price? Are you looking to reduce your monthly spend? Or, hey, our latency is just so bad. Like, our release cycles are weeks long, and we actually need to bring this right down to help the business in the long run. It's down to the recruiter to ask these questions to find out what the actual job is.
That's all right. You wait your turn, Michael. So, guys, I guess the other thing was, we were talking before, like, you know, in regards to, I guess pay has kind of been a bit stagnant in this area for the past year and a half. And I guess there's multiple reasons behind that. But a lot of companies are now advertising, you know, more flexible working hours, different environments. Are these things that appeal to your candidates still? Or, I mean, is this going to be a bit of a split answer, like with Dan, you know, with the Ronan style of contractor who's just going to be hunting money, and Barry, the permanent, who just wants, you know, the place to work. It's not going to stress him out too much. But, I mean, it has been a bit of a shift. And I'll start with you, Dan. Are some of the contractors now looking for more of a friendly place to work as opposed to just out and out rates at the moment? Or is it still, rates are still the main factor when people are deciding between a couple of opportunities?
I'm going to lean towards rates are the most important thing to a contractor. But I think there are people understanding at the moment where there's probably up to a 30% reduction in rates at the moment, where things are starting to level out. But then comes the flexibility of by majority working from home. Like, you can start a bit later or start a bit earlier, finish earlier or later. But a lot of the time as well, I am finding probably the second most important thing is the actual technologies that people are working with from a contract perspective. If the technology is old and deemed boring, their rates, they want more. And then if it's cool new tech that keeps them in that top 2-3% of the market, they'll reduce their rates quite substantially. And again, it's down to the recruiter to find out, is it just a word on a job spec, or is this legitimately part of the role?
Does that make people, I guess, a bit sort of, you know, the perception of them being a bit fickle though? They're like, oh no, I don't want to touch it. It's, you know, C# or whatever else, or .NET. I use more Node or Python. Like, does that kind of annoy, I guess, some people who are listing these JDs, or what's your experience there? Because I know, obviously, if you look at the popularity of, you know, programming languages, you know, you've got Python, JavaScript way up there, and you know, compiled languages are now dropping back down. But does that give the impression of, oh, bloody fickle developers to the client?
I think so. You are right. Yeah, it definitely does. But then you're hiring us for different reasons. Normally with MySpace, it's speed. So you're paying me to find people quickly. So even when I'm going through a job spec and it may be older tech, I already know in my head 3, 4, 5 people I'm going to call straight away from putting the phone down that would be interested in that. It's only when it becomes those five to 10 people aren't interested, then you've got to go out and find potentially fickle people that don't really want to do the job. So, does that answer it?
Yeah, we won't push it too much because I feel like, you know, we're going to start getting some people offended. But Barry, just to come back to the point before, are you finding now with the perm roles, people are looking more for that, you know, great place to work than the out and out salary? Is that becoming more of a factor on your side as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's the nature of like how people think, really, isn't it, on my side more so? I think that they're looking for the better companies so that they can feel safer in case there's another crash or something like that. I think that's, that comes into play. I've been seeing a lot more of like of people that are moving towards like Newcastle and Hunter Valley, and they're saying, look, I can come into the city maybe once or twice a fortnight, but I want to work remote, and that's it. And that's kind of typically the top end of the spectrum, but probably more your senior level candidates in the perm space. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I think so. So let's take it left field here for a minute. So the recruitment industry at the moment is dominated by people from Ireland, England, you know, Scotland. So obviously, you know, from the UK, from, you know, Canada, America. Why do you think that is in Australia? Like, why do you think it's dominated? Do you think it's maybe because as Australians we're very laid back, whereas you guys are a bit more get out there, you know, get on the gab, chat to everyone, like to meet people? What's your honest opinion around this? We'll start with you, Barry, because I think you we'll get a bit of a perspective from here.
I don't know. I think we have to build this country. I don't know. Well, we've been long connected, haven't we? We've been long connected with Australia. Like I, to go back in history, we all know the history between the English sending Irish prisoners over to Australia to start new lives here or to work on the farms and the land. I think we've always had that connection in terms of like the visa structure then as well. So like, it's very easy for me to get a visa to here in comparison to the US, say, for example. And it's the same with the English. And I think that once we get into this type of culture, we're very similar in terms of like banter and the crack, as the Irish would say. And I think we can just kind of, we do have a natural gift of the gab. We're not afraid to embarrass ourselves, really. So I think that's probably more so it, you know. It's a funny one. I get asked that question all the time. Like I'd say once every 2 weeks, even on the phone, a manager might ask me that I've never spoke to before, you know, why is it always English and Irish people that are ringing me?
What about yourself, Dan? And you think, you know, obviously, I think you make good points there, Barry. Like, you know, if I travel overseas, the discussions and the chats in a pub I can have with someone from Ireland or England feels very familiar, even though it's different. Whereas if I go to America, just because they speak the same language, but it's very different. You're there, you know, it's not quite the same. You can't have a running joke with someone 5 minutes into a conversation and they'll take it lightly. You know, I might get a gun pulled on me or something like that, but you know, from experience. But yeah, so Dan, do you think it's something similar? Do you think maybe because culturally it is quite similar and it's an easy adoption to come here and with a bit of really change of weather, is that, you know, similar to you for your experience?
Yeah, I was literally going to say that. Like Barry and I can pick this up pretty much anywhere in the world now that we've got the experience. The reason why you've kind of picked Australia is it's home from home, but also it's just better weather, nicer people, more relaxed, I think, and like better places to go and visit. Like if you're an outdoors person, like why wouldn't you want to come to Australia? Really, that's what's kept me here anyway.
Awesome. So I guess the other area is obviously recruitment gets a bit of a bad rap on the knuckles sometimes, which, you know, I think we spoke about with Robin a couple of times before, where I think it's potentially because, you know, it just, the job changing stage is so critical for a lot of people that sometimes one small bad experience can kind of scar them from that perspective. But let's flip that on its head for today. What are some of the things, you know, that really annoy you guys from a client side? Is it, you know, posting you guys a JD and not returning, you know, feedback? Is it interviewing people and not providing good feedback on why that person didn't progress? What are some of the things that, you know, annoy you guys from the recruitment stage when you're dealing with, you know, clients? And we won't mention names or anything because obviously we don't want to get you in trouble or us in trouble. But just from a behavioral perspective, what annoys you guys or what annoys you on behalf of the candidate from that side? And Barry, we'll start with you again, mate. I'll go alphabetical.
Number one is definitely the feedback. Like you would be shocked at how high a percentage it is of clients that I deal with that don't provide even a couple of lines of feedback in an email to me on candidate. And if they don't go through, they just don't get to, they might even mention their names again, you know?
Yep.
That's my number one pet peeve. Number two, I think, is when they, a clients lowball in terms of percentage, in terms of fee structures against for us. So we're kind of, sometimes you can go into a client and they can kind of see you as a second class citizen and say, well, we're not going to pay you X amount because we don't think, I know you're worth it. It's not as if they don't even have the money. They just don't see that our time is worth it. But yeah, that's another one. Yeah, I'll stick with those two for now before I get myself in anyway.
Yeah. No worries. Dan, is it the same for you on the contract side? Like, you know, in regards to feedback rates, like is it similar or are there a few different things from a contracts perspective that are more annoying?
I think bureaucracy is probably the biggest one for me. Is if I know what's going on, I know what projects are happening when they're going to start, when they're going to finish, where they are in the project. It's kind of why I've been quite successful in what I've done. But then if you find the perfect person, you know they've been struggling for 6-12 months to find this. It's costing the business potentially millions or definitely hundreds of thousands of dollars. And because we haven't got a signed piece of paper, they won't work with myself and I have to find a back door to go and do it. It just seems the most ridiculous concept in the world. You know, like I'm not asking to be on panel as a one-off placement. I know you're struggling. I've got people for you. That's the main thing. And then it does go back to going back to the feedback and lowballing on rates as well. I think the amount of time someone spent preparing for an interview, going through the level I'm sending people in, they've done potentially done a presentation before going in. They've done all the research on it, and some clients. It's actually, from my perspective, it's not a huge percentage of people, but just not getting back. And it might be because they're so busy, but I think that's a bit of a cop out sometimes.
Go ahead.
I think just to loop that into what you were talking about with Robin, maybe just, and I'll just touch on it briefly, is that you're between a rock and a hard place as well, because if you're the client, you might have had bad experiences with bad recruiters. You know, because there's a high churn and burn in the industry. I've been here 5 years in tech recruitment in Sydney, and Dan's like 4 or 5 as well. And I mean, there's not many recruiters that are in the space for that long. You typically get people that try it for a year or two and then leave, and that's probably where you get your bad experiences from. And then that kind of reverberates then down the line to when me and Dan go in trying to deal with them, you know. So that's probably one of the biggest reasons.
The interesting thing, actually, yeah, you mentioned before, Dan, as well, is the procurement perspective, where now a lot of people are bringing their own recruitment internally for whatever reason. Costs, some businesses do it for multiple reasons. But the procurement thing where, yeah, you can't deal in a one-off area, or you've got a GSI who's kind of locked up the tech space, you know, top to bottom because they've signed a global deal. And that sort of stifles innovation in a lot of companies. And like you said, you've kind of got to work around it, where it's become more around, you know, dollars and cents as opposed to the right people being able to inject them in as well.
Yeah, like 100%. I think the main point you've touched on there is it stops businesses innovating. If there should be, in my opinion, okay, I think every business does need to have some sort of rules of engagement. I completely get it. You can't just have people like the Wild West out there. But there needs to be a point where, okay, we are really, really struggling here. The business is suffering. The teams are suffering. Managers are suffering. Where can we look at? And then put it onto the managers. Okay, who do we know in this space that knows the space quite well? Or someone's been trying to engage me for the last 3, 4, 5 months, sometimes years. Let's give them a chance. And I think that's where we're working in Agile, and some things need to change direction. I think that's where it's broken. And the businesses that do that are the ones that are excelling.
Changing it up a bit. Yeah, it's interesting because, like you said, you've got a lockdown procurement space, or you've got something like a 007 panel in government, which just incentivizes people just to throw CVs en masse over the fence because it's fixed margin. There's no incentive to do any real background checks or, thoroughly interview clients before sending it over because the margins are that small enough. So you've kind of got this strange situation on both sides, in private and government, where the incentive to find good people, I mean, everyone says it, but no one's kind of willing to pay for the specialist, or a lot of the time not willing to pay for the specialist like you guys to go out and hunt people down as well. So I think you're right. Definitely. It's a bit of a chicken and egg situation, right, where one's affecting the other.
Definitely. Where would you say the industry could improve as well? You put it to us. What do you guys think as well?
I think people have got to take more responsibility. So my feeling on this is that at the end of the day, I'm responsible for hiring my staff. Now, I utilize people like yourselves as specialists to find people for me, but I have to be heavily involved in that process as well. I can't simply just outsource it and expect that it's always going to work out for the best. And if I'm bringing that person on board, there needs to be more... I guess, attention to getting them up to speed, understanding people. Okay, it might be a specialist contractor. That's great. They're still going to need at least 2 weeks to a month to get ramped up, you know, in regards to how the company works, who, what the structure's like, who they need to talk to, build the relationships, all those sort of things as well. So I think there needs to be more of an effort on the client side of investing back into talent. But the other area I see is that a lot of recruitment firms, like I said, will also present jobs that they have available to clients when it's not true, because they aren't on procurement, right? Now, Dan, I know you wouldn't do that. You'll basically talk to someone and go, okay, I've got profiles. I'll go and approach them directly before I go and talk to my clients or my, you know, people that I have on my database. But what we found a lot in the past is that, you know, I'll get approached for a job that I know the recruitment guy, because I know what to ask, has no chance in hell of getting, because that panel is locked down and he's not on it. So I think there just needs to be a bit more transparency and honesty, as well as expectation management on both sides from my perspective. But what do you think, Mike?
Well, from my point of view, there's that commoditization of the IT role. There's those real, you know, everyday roles and then specialization roles, right? But they're both treated the same. They're both thrown over the fence, and the collaboration between the recruiter and obviously the client is not there. I've seen it time and time again. There needs to be some crossover, but definitely to Carl's point, offering jobs that are not available or they're not on the panel and they can't offer it, and then they get your CV in to submit it. That's obviously an ethical problem, but also having CVs, multiple CVs go for the same job. So again, sitting on the database and it gets submitted and you don't know. And you're getting submitted from two other recruiters also for the same job, and it puts you out. I've seen that happen many times. So there's those type of ethical issues that I've seen. But again, what are your thoughts, guys? You know,
there's definitely a huge element of that in the industry. I think where I'm trying to answer this the right way. So with like Barry and I, we are in a particular vertical. Like we're DevOps, Sydney, contract or perm. So we're very pointy edge. So we know who's going to be looking 90% of the time, 85-90% of the time, we know who's going to want what or what it's going to take for someone to hire. So the whole rat race of getting released a job and it's gone to 10 other agencies, blah, 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 we're just going to just fire people in, doesn't happen too often. If we speak to a new candidate who's just come into the market, or they've pinged us a message on LinkedIn or whatever, however we've got this person, where I found most of the success, I think it's probably very similar to Barry, is actually we've got relationships with clients, a lot of clients. So we'll go through and go, actually, right, let's evaluate where this person's good for out of our clients, and then call them back and go, actually, look, I think you're going to be good for X, Y, Z businesses. Are you happy for me to approach these? Pick up the phone and go, I know you're trying to do this. They're trying to get there. This person has done this. Are you interested, or what's it going to take for you to create a role? I think that creating a role is probably the biggest, most value that I can add to a candidate and a client. And that's where I'm getting most of my wins from. I think it's probably similar to Baz, but I'll let Baz jump in.
My collaboration for you, Daniel, has been a big thing with the client, you know, very open dialogue.
Massive. Yeah,
definitely. What about yourself, Barry?
I mean, we break down our market. So like you do the one vertical and then you go, right, let's simplify it and go AWS, GCP and Azure. If you get somebody there's GCP, if somebody just wants to work on GCP and Golang in that type of space, say, there's only a certain amount of clients in Sydney that actually do that. And it's a very niche space within DevOps itself. So just to give you a real life example is like, if you have somebody like that, you anonymize them when you call, and say to the manager, look, this is who we have. The thing is, like, you could have that client has had that job out for 4, 6, 2 weeks, 2 months, 3 months, whatever it may be, and they mightn't have anyone, you know. So a lot of the success goes that way, and then a lot happens that way, and a lot of success then happens from the manager's actually reaching out directly to us. Like, a lot of the time, me and Dan don't even work the job descriptions. We don't actually have JDs, do we? It's mainly a phone call. Those are the two main areas. It's actually less panel work, really, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a good point. Look, I know for myself, when I'm engaged, the best recruiters that I've engaged with is where I have open dialogue, right? It's very transparent. There's no lies. It's very open, and it's very clear what we want. And as I said, it doesn't have to be a JD all the time available, you know. It's instinctive, right? But just changing the subject, it's probably more for Barry too to start off to ask this question. We also have been interviewing a lot of venture capital people recently and startup investment in Australia also. Where do you find, you mentioned startups before and small businesses or medium enterprise, where do you find the demand is at the moment industry-wise for those type of...
Trading.
Right.
Trading, definitely. There's a couple of new tech firms popping up. Weirdly enough, we've actually had a bit of work in the last couple of months in the prop tech space, in the property space, and the main one, like medtech. Those areas are, I would say, and I know it's weird to say property, but it's just for me personally, I've just had like a couple of different clients that have been in that space come in, and I haven't really actually done a lot in that space before, and all of a sudden I'm like this, kind of scratching my head, going, why is this happening? But let's say med tech, yeah, those three, definitely. But med tech is booming at the moment, absolutely booming.
Something in Australia is well funded, right? So, yeah, it helps from the door.
Yeah.
What about yourself, Daniel, in contract roles? Is that something that you're seeing, or is it just enterprise?
I think it goes back to like what Barry said. For me, it's mainly that mid-size business, 500 seats upwards. I don't really get too many like contract roles in startup world because usually cash flows is the issue. Most of my stuff is either consultancy background into the enterprises or straight into the enterprises. That's mostly what I do.
Yeah, totally makes sense. Totally. Yeah, well, Carl, have you got any more questions, mate, before we wrap up this lovely discussion?
Yeah, Barry, what's your handicap?
Yeah, I want to know. Come on.
It's 9 at the board.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Oh, really? Dan, you a golfer as well, mate? Or tend not to get out there?
Probably once every 10 years.
That's all right. So handicap and 9 beers, then that's fine. So yeah.
Barry, you might want to come and play the Linfield Golf Day in a couple of weeks' time. We might have to get you on the team.
Invite me 100%.
Awesome.
I'll drive a golf cart with a bottle of gin there, lads.
Perfect. Exactly. There's no restrictions there, is there? So, well, guys, thank you very much for joining us today. Like, we really appreciate it. It's great to get some insights from, you know, realistically, you guys are the best DevOps recruiters in Sydney. We'll be providing both links for Barry and Daniel at the end of the show. So, definitely feel free to reach out. If you are in this space and you haven't heard of them, then you must be definitely new to the Sydney area. But, gentlemen, again, thank you very much for today. It's been really great and insightful to hear your thoughts on the current space. And we wish you all the best, and we'll definitely be in contact soon. We will be running a recruitment roundtable, I think, a bit later on this year. So we'd love to have you back for that. It'd be great to get some more interesting feedback on some of the areas we didn't cover today. I think, like you mentioned, Daniel, certification is a big one. I think we'll definitely have to cover that with you guys next time.
Great.
Awesome. Thanks so much for the time as well, gents.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
See you soon. Bye-bye.